Hello and welcome into this edition of the Golf Channel Podcast with Rex and Lav. We finally have a Ryder Cup. Okay, so the competition is still not great. We still have a 5-point spread after day two, the exact same as it was at the opening day of the matches at Marco Simone. But, Rex, we finally have some competitive drama. Everyone saw what happened on the 18th green, Roy McIlroy getting into a little bit of a tiff with Joe LaCava, longtime caddy of Tiger Woods, and now the caddy for Patrick Cantlay. The action, this is a visual medium as well as an audio medium. He removed his hat and whirled it around his head. Basically the taunt, basically the jeer that Patrick Cantlay had endured all day long at the Ryder Cup. We'll get into those reasons in a moment. But after tension subsided on the 18th green, Rex, you were the only reporter who was outside the clubhouse to see what happened next. The floor is yours.
It's kind of surreal what happened next. We all kind of sprinted. You and I both were in the interview room. I wanted to hear what Patrick Cantlay's answer to at least the first couple questions were, because clearly it had been an eventful day for him on a lot of fronts. I'm sure we'll touch on it. But it seemed as if everything had been diffused on the 18th green. I think Shane Lowry kind of stepped in, had a few words for Joe LaCava, had probably something to say to a couple of the other Americans. But it seemed like Rory actually smiled when it happened on the green. And what had happened when LaCava was waving his hat around, I apologize for not having a visual hat on to help out with the medium, but he kind of got in Rory's sight line. And Rory's caddy, Harry Diamond, responded, like, what are you doing? And it seemed to be the end of it. It didn't seem like it was going to balloon, but emotions apparently got the best of him. I kind of scurried out to the front of the clubhouse where we'd be doing our live shot all week long. And luckily, our cameraman, who did a really good job of this, John Faco, was sort of fixated on the front of the clubhouse where all the courtesy cars were lined up, ready to take players and caddies back to the hotel. And I was, again, just trying to get ready, and I hear Rory screaming at the top of his lungs that you can't do that. You can't. How far can I take that? What is the rule on that before we go any further?
Take it as far as you need. We don't have anything. in post audio that can cover it up, but please go ahead.
Is it? Can I? You think I can? You know what? Last night's podcast was a record for us. How many views?
On YouTube, it was somewhere around 20,000, which for our little production is quite impressive. Let's get on with the story. You can say effing. Let's just go with effing.
Okay, that's fine. So Rory's screaming at Jim Bones McKay, who appears to have walked up and just tried to have a conversation with Rory at this point. We don't know. We haven't heard Bones' side of the story. At this point, Rory unloads on him, screams, "That can't happen. That can't effing happen." Effing happen is what I said, just to be clear. And then that's an effing disgrace. Again, at the top of his lungs, at this point, Lowry steps in between Bones and Rory, kind of separates the two of them, literally has to hold Rory back. At this point, I think everyone has probably seen the video, and then sort of tries to move Bones away. The best part of the video, not to make light of this, actually, I will make light of this. The best part of the video in my mind is poor Matt Fitzpatrick, who's standing behind Lowry, who's a large man, and Bones, who's also a large man. Matty Fitzpatrick is not a large man. And the look on his face, his eyes are huge. Like, what have I done? What is happening here? We have confirmed, Golf Channel did confirm while we were doing this report in live from, through Rory's agent, that this is a spillover from what happened on the 18th green. That this was, Rory was clearly aggravated. He tried to kind of hold his emotions in, and we all know that they can get heated at this particular event. But I've never seen anything in golf like this in my entire life.
The best part. So Matt Fitzpatrick is not a large man. Yeah. He is my size. Roy McIlroy is also not a large man. And yet he was being held back, not just by his own security guard, not just by Shane Lowry, but also by wife Erica before he got stuffed into his courtesy car and stormed away. This can only happen at the Ryder Cup. This should have been such an innocuous deal. The fact that Joe LaCava, who has heard and has seen the dancing and has heard the chants and heard the jeers for 8 hours at Marco Simone, they finally, the Americans do, finally get to just give it back to the crowd a little bit. And to do so, he takes it just a step too far, gets in Rory's line, and it should have just been a, hey, man, Can he move? And instead, it becomes a whole deal between the two sides. This can only happen at the Ryder Cup, and that is what makes it so fun. I guess the question, Rex, is what does this mean? Does this matter? The Americans are still trailing by five. Clearly, Rory, Lowry, Justin Rose, the European side, are pissed. What will happen? And did the intensity of this Ryder Cup, when we really haven't had much to talk about competitive-wise, it feels like things just got turned up a notch.
It certainly did. I'll go to this, and I think Todd Lewis and I were both guilty of this, where we fall in this trap where we take ourselves too seriously, kind of in what we do, because we're writing about golf. But even at this level, and this is a very important event, I don't want to take anything away from it, but we're writing and talking about golf, and Todd and I were doing this as seriously as we could, given the circumstances. Again, this was kind of unprecedented. You're absolutely right. This isn't going to happen anywhere else. And they went from Todd and I back to the desk with Rich Lerner, and Rich immediately went to Paul McGinley, who is friends with Rory and a former Ryder Cup captain and clearly very, very loyal to the European side, and asked his response. And his response was absolutely glorious. With a huge smile on his face, he said, "I loved it. I loved every minute of this." And I will also say that while we were waiting for them to come back to us for do a little bit more on the report, Paul Azinger, the American captain, walked up, and we told him what happened, and he saw the video. He had the exact same response. I think everybody's response should be that, okay, you don't want two grown men fighting. I don't particularly like that. We are in Italy. It seems to happen a lot here. I don't know why that is. But I just go to the idea that you're right. This was really, really flat. God bless you. I have people in my room right now, and one of them sneezed. This was really, really flat up until this point. And this sort of ignited everything. And I don't want to take anything away from what Cantlay did and Wyndham Clark did. I feel like what they did this afternoon by sort of salvaging that point and giving the United States side its first winning session was kind of what Poulter did back at Medina, that the Americans were rolling and this was all but over. And Poulter sort of came to life and turned into maximum Poulter and gave them something to play for. And now we have the miracle at Medina. I'm not saying that's what's going to happen, but I'm saying at least now there is a spark. To your point, what's going to happen? I think the European side comes out just swinging. Nah, not really swinging, although that clearly can happen at this point, given what we have seen, but I think metaphorically.
Now, that would certainly be a story to write. Teams coming out swinging, literally, on the first tee at Marco Simone. We will get to the fact of the matter that you have two women in your hotel room. We'll put a pin in that. It's not quite as scandalous as that sentence does sound. I think it doesn't just energize the Europeans. I think this energizes the Americans as well. Typically, a 5-point margin at this point is basically a death knell for the team that is not leading on the scoreboard. That does not necessarily feel like the case. I've always made the case, Rex. I know you wrote for NBCSports.com/golf on Saturday night, the five reasons why the U.S. team can win. I've never understood why getting seven and a half of the 12 singles points on Sunday is out of the realm of possibilities. These are some of the best players in the world. All of them are ranked as at the top 30 in the world. Europe has played some of their dogs all four matches so far. So let's hear it. The largest margin ever overcome is 10-6, 4 points. This we have is 5. Why can the U.S. do it?
Well, check out NBCSports.com/golf to get the entire breakdown, because I don't want to go through all five. That's why I wanted to write this, because I have another idea and I want to go in a different direction. Because while we were stuck in traffic, it took a long time to get home, folks. Apparently, bus drivers take wrong turns, and that's not a big thing in Italy and get caught in traffic. What I wanted to do is when they sent out tomorrow morning's slate, how it's going to line up, I did what we always do, and I started kind of going down. The European side needs just 4 points. And as I'm doing the math in my head, I'm thinking I'm kind of knocking it off. So let's just do this shot by shot. You ready? So it's in the very first match of the day, it's Jon Rahm against Scottie Scheffler. Scottie Scheffler has not played well this week, and it's not even his putting. I've seen him hit some of the most horrendous shots that I've seen him hit really ever, because all I know him to be is a ball-striking robot. So I think that one goes to Rahm.
That's a rematch, you'll remember, of Whistling Straits.
Yes.
When Scottie stormed out of the gates and beat Jon Rahm, who was playing arguably better than anyone on the golf course that year. I'm with you, though. Rahm is rested after not playing on Saturday afternoon. Scotty is scuffling a little bit and got benched on Saturday afternoon. I'm with you. I do think Rahm wins that one. There's one.
Okay, Gasback, we want to move these along. I want to hear your thoughts, but keep them to a minimum, all right? So then you have in the second match, Victor Hovland and Colin Morikawa. I'm giving that one to Victor because he has been brilliant this week.
That's also a repeat of 2021. Two former classmates. I'm with you. Victor Hovland did not play well on Saturday afternoon. I think he will come out of the gates very strong, as he typically does.
I give the Americans the third match. It's Patrick Cantlay against Justin Rose. Clearly, Patrick Cantlay has something to prove for whatever reason. He is angry this week, and he's playing really, really well as proof of what he did on Saturday. Let's hope Joe LaCava doesn't make anyone angry during that.
I'm with you. Cantlay as well. In the fourth match, Roy McIlroy, Sam Burns. Yeah, that one's going to be Roy McIlroy. I think that could be ugly, Rex. Yeah. What happens in match four.
So you and I are on the exact same page on this one. So now Europe suddenly has, through four matches, they have 3 points, and they only need four. So now they have eight matches to get one more point. That seems like, oh, it's a foregone conclusion. I don't know about you, but going down the list, it's hard for me to get to that fourth point. In my mind, it almost gets to Tommy Fleetwood and Ricky Fowler. And I will say in the match before them is Shane Lowry and Jordan Spieth. I don't know how that's going to turn out, but it's going to be a glorious pillow fight.
Yeah, I was going to say that could absolutely be a pillow fight. Max Homa, you would think, would have the edge over Matt Fitzpatrick. Max Homa has been the best player on the American side so far. Brian Harman really showed up on Saturday, winning both of his matches alongside Max Homa. He's going against Tyrrell Hatton, who, like Rahm, sat out on Saturday afternoon. To me, match seven is an absolute barn burner. Brooks Koepka on the American side has not played particularly well. And Ludwig Aubert, who looked like an absolute stallion for the first two matches and then did not play particularly well at all when they really needed him to on Saturday. Four balls. Sepp Straka, Justin Thomas. I could see Sepp getting that, not just because.
Right. Hey, Brooks and Ludwig. Who are you picking?
I think Brooks.
Me too. All right, go ahead.
Yeah, I think it's time for Brooks to show up. I think the cup gets clinched in this one. Match eight, Sepp Straka and Justin Thomas. JT has a very strong singles record, but Sepp Straka has looked at times to be awfully good. I just don't have a ton of faith in JT at this point. Losing strokes gained to the field, it's actually been one of the worst performing American players to this point. So I think match eight is where this thing ends.
No, I disagree, and that's the bulldog in you, by the way. That's University of Georgia's Sepp Straka, and I think you went for both of the bulldogs in this week's field to win, so not too shocking on that front. After that, you have Hogard and Xander Schauffele. That goes to Xander, in my opinion. I feel like JT is going to win that match against Sepp. And then Shane Lowry, speed, as we said, the ultimate pillow fight. And in my mind, it comes to Tommy Fleetwood and Ricky Fowler in that 11th match.
Ricky did not play at all on Saturday. Lots of rumors of health issues, which were confirmed by the U.S. team members who actually met with the media for the first time all week on Saturday evening, said it's basically some sort of illness that has run through the team, the captains, and the caddies. And then the anchor match, if you're keeping score at home, it's Wyndham Clark, the U.S. Open champion, versus Robert McIntyre. I bet you Luke Donald is hoping this entire match does not come down to Robert McIntyre. But
don't
we
trust Bobby.
Shall see. Rex, we totally glossed over the fact of this whole Patrick Cantlay deal. Did we not? It wasn't just the fact that Patrick Cantlay did what he did. And if you keep your score at home, a hat trick of birdies to steal a full point for the Americans after being jeered and taunted all day long. Why was Patrick Cantlay not wearing a hat? Is the Sky Sports report that he has caused friction and a fracturing of the U.S. team room accurate? What do you know?
He wasn't wearing a hat because he's got a big head. And not, again, this isn't metaphorically. This is actually, he's got a big head. Anyone who can see it right now knows it's a big head. He didn't wear a hat 2 years ago at Whistling Straits as well. I don't think that was a protest because we didn't hear anything about it then. And Rory McIlroy hasn't worn a hat. And because he's pointed out, he's got a little tiny head and they don't come in his size. I don't think the hat is the thing we need to worry about here. And we went round and round about this Sky Sports report, and it may or may not be correct. I don't know. I've spoken with people inside the team room who have confirmed that he has talked about the idea that players should be compensated to play the Ryder Cup. He's not the first player to do that. If you go back to the late 90s, David Duvall did that. Marco Mira did that. I don't think this is something that's out of the realm of possibility, and it's probably not going to sit well with the public. I understand that, but we're in a day and age when players want to be compensated. I don't think Patrick Cantlay, even before his finish today, was the problem. He could be a problem in the U.S. team room, but I don't think he's the problem. And look, we can rehash this on tomorrow night's podcast and down the road. There'll be plenty of time to unpack this. Is he the most popular guy in that team room? No, probably not. There's a reason why he and Xanderson seem to spend a lot of time together. He didn't go to the welcome dinner, but according to Zach Johnson, it was a quote-unquote excused absence, which leads you to believe that he was one of the guys that was probably battling whatever it is they were battling. And I think this probably has gotten twisted in a way that we're only going to find out days, weeks, maybe even months down the road when players finally feel comfortable talking about what goes on inside the team room. And they don't do that very often. In this particular case, they want to sort of circle the wagons and protect each other. We saw that when, I mean, Pat got hammered with questions about this in the press conference tonight. And to their credit, the players around him kind of came to his defense. Is there something there? Yeah, probably. I mean, probably they don't want to hear this particular week about how players should be compensated, but I don't think it's the problem that the U.S. has been dealing with. I think that's a number of other things.
Yeah, I think that was well said. And talking to someone close to Cantlay, they disputed some of the points that were made in that tweet chain. Obviously, you heard what the U.S. players said in the press conference as well, jumping to his defense. Is he the problem for the U.S. this week? No. Is it an issue that likely needs to be addressed for the next team competition in Montreal? I would say that is true. I think this is just typical scapegoating and trying to point fingers, right? Like, there have been a series of mistakes that Captain Zach Johnson has made. You could look at some of his captain's picks. You could look at some of his lineup choices. Stars like Scottie Scheffler and Brooks Koepka have not played particularly well. There are myriad reasons, and it always comes down, it seems, like the most salacious one is the one that draws headlines. And is there something there? Yes. Is that the reason why the Americans now trail 5 points heading into Sunday? It is fair to say it is not. All right. We've talked the drama with Cantlay. We've talked the Sunday singles lineup. Rex, on this mini pod, do you care to share why you have two women in your hotel room?
One of the women is my wife, just to be clear, and her best friend. And it's a very small room. We've done one other pod, but it's not a large room. It's a nice room. But and her best friend, and they have been here longer than we have. They flew in last Friday. They have been touring Rome. They have been touring the Amalfi Coast, Pompeii. Am I missing anything? Naples. And so today they came out to the golf course. My wife lasted about 45 minutes. Her friend spent the whole afternoon. And tomorrow my wife, bunkmate, will probably last about 45 minutes. And Gina will spend the entire afternoon thoroughly enjoying the golf.
Shout out, bunkmate. Somehow she has suite tickets that do not come with all you can drink tickets.
Right.
So shout out, bunkmate, for being responsible and not forcing you to take out a second mortgage on your home. I'm sure everything in the Hoggard household back in Longwood is going swimmingly. There's no need to check in at that point. Before we let you go, Rex, what is the final score and who is the winner of this?
Europe. I mean, I think we already established that. I think you and I both kind of went through the card and came up with it. But it's closer than we ever thought it was going to be. Certainly up until maybe the, I don't even want to say the last hour, up until the last 30 minutes, up until Cantlay and Wyndham Clark were able to do what they did, it seemed like, man, this is a foregone conclusion, but it would still be historic. And I don't think that happens, not with that crowd, not with everything going in the Europeans' favor. If I had to guess, like I said, 14 anywhere, or I think they win either right at 14 and a half, 15, 15 and a half, somewhere around in there.
I'll go 16 to 12. It's always hard to say what the final score is going to be because once, if the match gets decided as potentially early as I think that it could, then you have players playing out the string. Do they care? Do they not care? Do they want to just improve their individual record? They want to make sure they look good on Wikipedia in 10 years time. It's a true who can say situation. I do think it will be tense at times, but ultimately I do think we're looking at a 4-point victory, which is no fun to write. Like at this point, when you have a 5-point margin, a 4, 5, 6-point margin of victory does absolutely nothing for us, Rex. We've had that each and every single time since the miracle at Medina. And as we've already mentioned, that one too was a 4-point margin heading into Sunday singles. We'll get into on Sunday, assuming this does become a 4, 5, 6-point margin of victory, what can be done to restore some competitive drama and tension to the Ryder Cup.
But that's fights. Not
going to be on this podcast. Yeah. Literally slugging it out. More parking lot fights. More player caddy drama. I'm here for it. I'm absolutely here for it. Without it, I'm not sure what we'll be talking about on this podcast. Thank you, Joe LaCava. And most importantly, thank you, Roy McIlroy. All right. That's going to do it for this edition of the Golf Channel Podcast with Rex and Lab. Make sure you go to NBCSports.com/golf for all of our news, notes, features, commentary, apparently breaking news, video clips, and make sure you keep pounding the subscribe button on YouTube. Let's boost those numbers. We appreciate you guys watching. Appreciate you guys listening. We'll be back for a full episode on Sunday night, breaking down exactly what went down at Marco Simone.